Hello? Can you hear me? Is there anybody listening? Hi, I guess. I'm Buggy. And, this is going to sound kind of weird. I found a drill. I was going through the mail at work, inventorying the orders we got in, and one package was just addressed to the one who will pierce the heavens. And no return address or anything. Inside was just a small drill attached to a chain, like a necklace. The boss said we didn't order it, and he didn't know where it came from. Like, no one else really wanted it, so I guess it's mine now. So, I went on a walk today, and the drill started glowing. Green, pulsing light. It started getting stronger and stronger as I walked, and eventually it led me to this radio station. I went inside, and the place was completely empty. Looked like it had been abandoned for years. Went into the sound booth, and there was this panel on the soundboard that seemed to be reacting to the drill. Fit in there perfectly, like a key. I turned it, and all the equipment powered up, and an on-air sign lit up. And then I started talking to you. And now, well, I guess now I really don't know what I'm doing. I just kind of stumbled in here by accident. So, looks like there's a track queued up here. It just says Kizu. I'm not really sure what else to do, so I guess I'll just play it. Here we go.
This is the story of a podcast that is yet to realize its true destiny. An ambitious nobody begins an obscure underground show with one stated purpose: to kick established concepts of anime podcasting to the curb. Episode by episode, he advances the medium a bit further, evolving it beyond what it was before. And just who the hell does this guy think he is? This is the tale of Andrew Buggy Kerner. This is Spiral Radio.
Episode 1, Monogatari, Part 1, Kizu Genesis. If I were, as a pretentious connoisseur of artsy anime, forced to admit my biggest failing, it would be that I don't like Monogatari. This is not to say that I dislike Monogatari. It does a few things that frustrate me, but I don't think it's flat out bad. In fact, I'm fairly certain the show is actually good, based on who all it's managed to captivate. I just don't understand the appeal. And this bothers me because usually, even when I don't like a series, I can at least understand why other people like it. But when a series is hugely popular and I can't even understand why, that bothers me. It makes me feel like an idiot. I don't think I'm a dumb person. I studied English. I'm all about being able to read meaning into things even when there is none. I should be able to get something. Monogatari? I just don't get it. The thing that bothers me most about this is that, by all appearances, it seems like something I should love. Its characters exchanging witty banter and talking in circles around each other. It's artistically unique. It loves breaking the fourth wall. On paper, it should be one of my favorite series. And yet, the elements I should have loved were the same ones I found myself unimpressed with. Instead of loving the dialogue-heavy nature, I became frustrated with what I saw as circular, unimportant conversations. Instead of enjoying the visual flair, I thought it was over-animated. And yet, I saw so many people whose tastes I trust praising it. I knew that there had to be something there, something I was missing, and I wanted to figure out what. That's when I stumbled across a podcast that explained, in depth, the appeal of Bakemonogatari, and I thought, maybe I could love this. Maybe, if I gave the show another shot, and went into it with the right mindset, it could become one of my favorite shows. So I decided to return to the beginning.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. I always enjoy the chance to get to talk about this franchise. It's one of my most favorite things in anime. It's responsible for a lot of the things I currently work on and do. It's responsible for starting my podcasting career. It's responsible for hooking me up with my good friend and host of Senpai Coast to Coast and writer for Wave Motion Canon, Josh Dunham. We hooked up through that show and all of our projects that we work on together. I mean, Bakemonogatari is responsible for that because he just happened to notice me talking about the show on Twitter and was interested in what I had to say. So the show's had a big impact on me personally in that way. And that's not even talking about kind of how the themes and the emotional story resonated with me.
That's the subtle doctor speaking. He and Josh Dunham were the two who recorded that podcast I mentioned earlier, the one that made me reconsider my stance on Bakemonogatari and ultimately urged me to give it another chance. I approached him, as well as Josh Dunham, to ask what exactly it was that drew them to the series, and what I should be looking for going back into it.
So my attraction with the series kind of, it began with Bake when it, you know, aired back, I think it was the summer season of 2009, and I was blown away. I'd not seen anything like that. I'm a young anime fan. You know, we're talking nearly, what, 10 years ago? It's 7 years ago by this point. I'm looking at this. I don't know how to make heads or tails of it. But you know when you see something and it's just like, it clicks. Like, I could almost refer to it as love at first sight. I saw this beautiful girl. I'm not specifically referring to Senjo Gahara, although she definitely meets the ticket. I'd seen this beautiful, beautiful woman, and I was in love. I knew nothing about her. It's very interesting how attraction works that way. You know nothing about this person. There's no reason to ever feel so deeply about them in just the first few seconds of ever laying eyes on them. But that's how I felt with this series. After the end of the first episode, I was completely like, oh my God, what is this? I've never seen any. It wasn't like an Akira or Ghost in the Shell. It was not like that, but it was something as cerebral as Evangelion, but at the time, me being an Evangelion hater, was able to enjoy and kind of make heads or tails of. So I was able to not only digest it, but there was some magical sense behind that, which is very important to me. At the time, I was also very deeply interested in psychology, and I'm reading, you know, kind of the works of Carl Jung, and Jung has this brilliant quote, which I'll paraphrase, but basically he says, leave the juice still in it. When you're interpreting dreams, when you're analyzing things, don't kill it. Let it breathe, kind of get what you can from it, and then leave it a little bit, because there's a sense of magic. There's still a sense of misunderstanding or not being able to fully grasp what something is that keeps it magical. And that's what Monogatari is. Even now that I've analyzed the whole, well, not the whole series, that would be kind of pretentious to say, but even though I've analyzed it at some length, there's still a little bit of magic left. Even when I see it, there's still something more where I have to say, why is this one shot here? It's just so well put together. It is like a film lover's wet dream. I don't see how anyone who's really interested in the art of editing could not be interested in Monogatari unless they're turned off by some other aspect. But it's definitely not going to be the editing.
I love... where to begin? Well, like I mentioned before, that it's incredibly visually interesting. So some parts of it more than others. I think it's always pretty, but I think it transcends just being like, again, pretty or nice to look at. Like, I think cinematically it's interesting. I really enjoy the shot composition and the camera angles and what kind of how they choose to shoot it. And the way the characters are animated and the things they're doing. I mean, it's just, there's always something really, really interesting going on, which helps because this is a very talky series. And I like talky shows a lot, but I realize that can be a turnoff for some people. I think not only is like what the characters in Monogatari, like what they're talking about, is interesting to me. Like, it's always, there's always like wordplay. There's always kind of multiple levels to the discussion. Double entendres, great kind of phrasing. Like, the dialogue is interesting, but it really helps that like the background is changing and becoming surreal, and they're showing the characters from weird angles, or they're making these like weird, like leaning back their neck so very far. Like, they're always, there's lots of little tricks.
Head tilt.
Yes, yes. The colors will change. The lighting will change. Like, there's always something, again, to make that not a boring experience to watch, even though there's not a lot of like super fluid animation per se, right? Characters aren't acting very much. They're just talking. And yet the show holds my attention very well. The characters are probably the reason to come and stay to that show and stay with it. They like all of them. I mean, I wouldn't have said that after I watched just Bakemonogatari, but at the point I'm at in the story, like all five of the main characters, as well as the additional supporting characters that get introduced kind of as we go along, they're all really, really fascinating. They all have these fantastic emotional journeys. They all have distinct personalities that, you know, you could argue, I guess, that most of them kind of begin as tropes. But if you stick with the show, they kind of break out of those boxes and expand what they are and become, you know, Senjo Gohara becomes more than just a tsundere. Mayoi and Hanakawa, they become more than their archetypes. You know, they all the characters. And how they interact with each other is just always just a joy to watch. And thematically, I think the show resonates with me because there's a lot of flawed people looking for like relationships, looking for some kind of like, they want to reach out to someone and communicate and be heard and to feel like they are needed, and but also to help someone else so that someone else needs them. And figuring out, they each kind of all figure out in their own ways how to say that and how to express that, and they all express it differently. And that's a theme that that really speaks to me. And so that's one of the things I enjoy the most. And you know, there's other like tertiary things, like whenever there's a fight scene, it's dope. The music's really good. The music is so good. But yeah, I think I've hit on the main stuff.
So that was two opinions. But they were opinions of people who had both been involved in anime analysis for a while, and I knew I was only getting views from that perspective. I decided to try to get another angle by going to two of the people who had recommended the show to me in the first place. People I knew from the AniList community. I figured that, since they were the people who had recommended the show to me, they'd at least be able to come up with a few reasons why I would like it if I were to try it again.
Well, first of all, I'll start with the animation.
and the art style and everything, because I think Shaft did an amazing job with that, and that is definitely one of the reasons why I started loving Shaft as a studio, why I'm going to continue watching the Monogatari series, even though I kind of grew out of anime, but I'm still going to watch that. And it's like animation styles like when Kanmaru totally wrecks Araragi in her arc, as when she was the rainy devil before Senjugahara came in and cured her, you know, where she just completely guts him and everything, and he would die if he wasn't a vampire at that stage, and just shafty things. I mean, you know, head tilts. That's just stuff that gets me, really gets me, and I really like that. I think it adds to the show, as well as the monologue, when Araragi narrates stuff, you know.
Oh yeah, it's like the perspective. It's very much a show with first person perspective.
Yeah, I like that very
rather
much
than
about
you
it.
Know third person cinematic.
Yeah, exactly. Also, that the obvious point would be the interactions between the characters. That is just something that the show builds off of so much. Like, especially as I mentioned before, the dynamic and the interactions between Hachikuji and Araragi are so good. The interactions between him and his sisters are, well, aside from the toothbrush, are also really good, I think. Especially in the first season, where you don't really see much of the sisters, but they wake him up when he has had no sleep at all, because he was up all night helping people, getting rid of oddities and everything. The story structure overall, I think, is also very good. It's not like a typical harem comedy, whatever, where you just have the main character and he has these five girls around him all the time, and they do some random stuff, and then next episode they do other random stuff, and the stuff that happened in the previous episode has no relevance at all. That's not how Monogatari works at all. It has an actual story that progresses and that has twists and turns, and really like that about the story. It's not just like a flat disc. It's like progressing through and going up and down sometimes and up.
That's Fetch. At least I think that's Fetch. I know that's the name he uses online, I'm just not fluent in German, so I'm not sure how correctly I'm pronouncing it. He is, as you heard, not an anime fan so much as he is a Monogatari fan. In addition, I spoke to Respawn, a man who's a big enough fan of Monogatari that, in the 2 years I've known him, his avatar has always been some image of Araragi or another. I decided to pick his brain on what exactly drew him to Monogatari as well.
You mean aside from the fan service, of course. It's something that I wasn't sure, like, it was something I was not very fond of the first time, but it's all the talking, I guess. I mean, it's a lot of talking, it's really dense stuff. If it weren't for the subs, I would have no idea what's going on, obviously. But the thing is, they try really hard to explain, like, the concept behind the monsters, and like I said, the monsters were probably the favorite part, my favorite part of the show. Like I said, these monsters aren't, they're not just monsters of the week. They don't just show up and destroy things and then he kills them off in the end just because. They appear for a reason, and they disappear for a reason. And that's what I like the most. It's just that they have the monsters themselves have a background. They have, like, some established folklore. And then we expand that into something that we can actually make exciting and actionable, I guess.
The storytelling, the way that it's done, is something that I like, with all the like arcs that take place in different times. Like the arc following the one that you just watched isn't necessarily happening right after. It may be that this is the arc that came like chronologically before 10 arcs that you watched or something like that. Or maybe the arc that you watch is even in the future relative to the arc that you are going to watch next. And there are different things. Aside from that, a big part has to be the music within it, the soundtrack and the opening and ending themes. The ending theme of Bakemonogatari is the best thing that there is. I'm not entirely sure, but I would say that out of all the music I've heard, out of all the songs, this might be my favorite song ever. Or if not, it's top five for sure. It's this song is just amazing to me. This song is like no joke. Like a couple of times when I'm in the right mood, I can just cry listening to that song because it's so beautiful. It makes me really emotional. That song is really great. I love it so much. Aside from endings and openings, the soundtrack by itself is very cool. It has so many different kinds of music. Like one of them is like a jazzy song. The other one is like a Western kind of song where it just sounds. When I close my eyes and listen to that song, I imagine the Wild West, you know, with the cowboys and we shot the sheriff stuff. Yeah, it's just the music is really great in the show. I really like that.
So finally, I had enough reasons and perspectives to formulate an answer about what exactly it is that people like about Monogatari and what I should be looking for. The animation, the characters and their dynamics, the music, the directing, the storytelling, the world building. Basically, well, everything. Which meant that I had a dilemma on my hands, because if everything is what drew people to Monogatari, shouldn't I have picked that up the first time? After all, Josh had said that, for him, it was like love at first sight. If the show really is that great, shouldn't it have been that way for me too?
No, the first time I saw it at the screening with my friend, it actually didn't hit me then, just because I wasn't really paying attention, I guess. But I rewatched the first couple episodes alone, and I was like, oh shit, this is actually pretty nice.
I think that point came in second season. Before that, it was just a cool show that I liked, would have probably rated it at something between an 8 and a 9, or an 80 and a 90, I think, probably. But yeah, the breaking point was the second season for me. The breaking point was that, or the point where I knew this is my favorite show and probably nothing will top it, is when I really got emotionally invested into the show. And that happened in the second season.
Right off the bat, it was definitely a seasonal watch. And I, even though I had a profuse love for the show, I mean, I'll be 100% honest. I really loved Young Blackjack and thought the world of it until it kind of petered out. I was practically defending it left and right from other people on the internet who I thought were not giving it a fair shake. And looking back, okay, at that point it was justified. But now taking the series as a whole, yeah, that series wasn't as good as it initially led on. But to kind of answer the question, I keep kind of digressing, I apologize. It was episode 5, or no, episodes, where was it? It was basically Kanbaru. We have to get to Kanbaru, and then it was the first fight I was invested. But by the time that last fight, which I think is what, like episode 7, where Araragi and Kanbaru are in that room full of nothing but desks, and they're just utterly going at it, and Araragi's being slaughtered. That was when, after the end of that episode, I was like, okay, this is something. This was not just anime of the year. This was not just anime of the season. It was a classic. And I'll stand by that. Yeah, I think Mono, you know, Bakemono is definitely a classic. I would recommend it at least.
It was episode one, Bakemonogatari hooked me. It was when Sinjo Gohara first entered the scene. You know, well, I should not first, because I guess first she's like falling and Araragi catches her. But after Araragi has that conversation with Hanekawa, after he has the conversation with Hanekawa, and he steps out of the classroom, bam, there is Sinjo Gohara with a stapler and some other sharp object, I can't remember what it is, shoved into his mouth and threatening him. And I just found that to be super exciting. And just what she was saying and the tone with which she was saying it, like, she's absolutely captivated me. I just was like, okay, you have my attention, girl. I'm totally into what's going on right now and super interested. So yeah, that encounter, really grabbed me, and, the show was, you know, it had me from there going forward. I was going to stick with it. So that point is where it grabbed me, is this is something I need to watch, but the point that, the show went from good to great, went from this is very entertaining to this is something special, was episode 8, I think, that the finale of Kanbaru's arc, Tsuruga Monkey, and kind of her resolution, and how Sinjo Gohara plays her part in that, and how that wrapped up, which I found her story incredibly moving, but Kanbaru's, and then the resolution of it, I thought was extremely well done. And that whole arc, I just thought was absolutely incredible. But yeah, that arc is when I thought the show stepped it up in a big way. I think that's when I thought that it is very special and it is very memorable, and that it is something that will probably last beyond like current fascination with it. And then it really sealed the deal as one of my personal favorite shows at the end of episode 12, when Araragi and Sinjo Gohara have their conversation on a blanket staring up at the sky. That's when it became one of my favorite shows of all time.
I would have to say, like, towards the, like, at the end of the very first arc with Sinjo Gohara. Because I think that's sort of the point where we sort of figured out it's not going to be just another fighting show. They have, like, some sort of concept behind everything, I guess. Like, it's not just, like, random violence and whatnot. It's just that towards the end of the Sinjo Gohara arc, you have Ashino explaining like what this whole aberration thing is, like the crowd and whatnot. And I'm like, this is an interesting concept. I like how they're doing this. It's not just some random monster. It's something that she sort of brings out from her own experiences and her own life, I guess. So it's not just like another monster of the week story.
I don't know. I know I'm approaching this the wrong way. I'm looking for objectivity in something as subjective as, when am I supposed to start liking Monogatari? I want there to be a right answer to this. If I could just figure out when I'm supposed to fall in love with the show or at what point I have to give up on it, things would be so much easier. But that's not how things work, is it? At this point, I should probably explain my background with the Monogatari series. I got a random recommendation for Bakemonogatari from a friend, but for whatever reason I just wasn't in the mood for it at the time, so I only ever ended up watching the first episode. I picked up with the second episode roughly a year later at the urging of the Annalist community. This was during the long holiday break in December when I had no sort of obligations, so I had a lot of free time to watch anime. First I watched Space Dandy, a rather schizophrenic show in terms of tone and pacing, but which was usually frantic and action-heavy. I followed it with a season of Mushishi, a very slow and relaxing show. Someone told me that, since I liked Mushishi, I would probably like Monogatari since they had some similarities.
That was probably me, because they're my two favorite shows, pretty much, so. I mean, the reason I like Mononoke and this and Mushishi to an extent is that they have, I guess, this sort of mystique behind them, in that they're sort of folklore, yeah. I just feel like Monogatari just has more of a plot than Mushishi does.
So I went from Space Dandy, which was usually very fast-moving, to Mushishi, which allowed me to zone out and drink in the atmosphere, to Monogatari, a show where the action was usually fairly slow, but the dialogue was always very fast. You'd think the previous two shows would prepare me for the third, but it was actually the opposite. After Mushishi, where everything said and done had weight, I wasn't ready for the frivolous banter of Monogatari. And after two shows that were purely episodic and consequently had to move the story along fairly quickly, Monogatari's use of story arcs lasting several episodes felt like they were dragging and padded. So I began to grow frustrated. The characters were saying nothing of value or importance. They weren't doing anything. I just wanted them to get to the point. So I began chatting with these people from AnnieList who had recommended the show in the meantime, and, well, I can blame the show for starting to lose my attention. But the diversion I had created didn't exactly help. So looking back on it, I feel like I didn't give the show its proper due. I think I may have watched it wrong.
I mean, I don't think it's that you're watching it wrong, it's just, I don't know. I feel like it's a show that some people really like and some people just don't like as much. Not even necessarily because of like the fan service and whatnot, which I know some people don't like, but just because it's so dense. Like, there's so much talking that it's easy to think that these people are really full of themselves, like, show us something that's actually happening.
I want to say you watched it wrong, because that sounds like such a absolute kind of pretentious, like, I completely understand a series, and that's not the case, but you said they're having a conversation that seems to lead nowhere or doesn't have to pertain to the series, and, you know, I'll be fully honest, there are plenty of times when I feel the exact same way, and I'm like, okay, how does this relate? And I have to literally stop and ask myself, this conversation, how does it relate? And I had that moment actually just recently with Nisei Monogatari for the first episode. I had always thought the whole banter with Mayoi had been kind of just that, banter. And then I stopped and realized, okay, wait a second. What is the theme of Nisei Monogatari? And then, okay, with that in mind, what does this mean? Why are we using these words, this analogy, with this moral of the story, I suppose, if you could use such a term? Well, they make the joke of being able to buy love for a discount. And they'll later introduce Kaiki into the same series, who does nothing unless there's money involved. Whereas Araragi is completely motivated by love and has literally just gotten done paying Oshino off for his, you know, last few services. So there's that whole dichotomy between love and money. Money is brought up multiple times within the first episode, and it's brought up again with Kaiki and made a central theme. So it seems like banter, and it definitely is banter, and it's only made useful after the fact. The same with Mayoi kind of using the Japanese pun of if you stick, I guess it's not just explicit to Japanese, but if you stick the courage to in front of any other sentence, it now becomes noble. You know, the courage to tell a lie, the courage to leave somebody behind, the courage to break somebody's heart, the courage to steal, you know, whatever. It has a different inflection, a different tone, a different meaning. And Kaiki then, you know, is later introduced again and says, you know, what's the difference between a fake and something that's real, which is more valuable? And his philosophy, of course, is being the fake thing is more valuable because it has to pretend and try harder to be real. So, you know, use that, the courage to blank. Well, the fake thing has to have the courage to be real. by basically pretending to be noble, it is in fact itself more noble. It's kind of, you know, it's a paradox. And in a lot of ways, especially when you look at truth in, I hate to say this because it sounds very weeaboo, pretentious white man, but in a lot of Buddhist mythology and teaching, there is a paradox, and it's in those paradoxes that you will find absolute truth. And that's a paradox in and of itself. You know, something can be either absolutely this or absolutely not this. And almost the same time, which completely defies Western philosophy, teaching, and thinking.
A paradox like this brings me back to why exactly I want to love Monogatari so much. Because it's built off of these paradoxes where truth and meaning are obscured. It's a series that very much has a first-person perspective, rather than a third-person cinematic one. The novels are written in first-person, and the anime reflects that with narration by Araragi and frequent shots of his eye, establishing that we're seeing things directly through his perspective. And of course, because Nisio Eason, the author, is a self-admittedly self-indulgent writer, and Shaft, the production studio, as a studio has such a unique style that permeates all their works so heavily, that means that the creators have left their own very strong marks on Monogatari as well. As a result, you need to view Monogatari through three different lenses: Araragi's perspective, Nisio Eason's perspective, and Shaft's perspective. And on top of all this obscured meaning and fluid perspective, the series will frequently break the fourth wall. So it's a series where truth and meaning are up in the air, and it consequently defies and eludes definition and examination. And that's the type of writing that I love most. That's where my critical passions lie. And it's something I don't think I've seen anywhere near in this degree in a medium like anime. In fact, I think I'm going to go out on a limb with a statement here.
Do it, do it. Hot takes. Bold opinions.
I think that what Neon Genesis Evangelion is to Freudian and psychoanalytical critique, Monogatari is to postmodern critique.
I'm so happy. I'm so happy right now.
Anime production is so strenuous and difficult that if they go through the effort to make it, it's there for an explicit. It's not the same as, you know, moving the camera in real life 3D space and having the actor say these lines over and over again. These are drawings that take time by people who are underpaid, always understaffed, especially at Shaft, and always in a rush. So if they bother to do it, there is an explicit reason for doing so.
I mean, I think it's, you know, if you want to be super granular about it, you know, it would be like a case-by-case basis. You know, I don't think there's any one answer to, like, what is the meaning of, you know, this visual element, that line, etc. But I do think they're all in service of, you know, insert a long, like, disjunctive here. Like, they're all in service of character development or world building or atmosphere or on and on and on. I don't think that there is a ton of throwaway stuff in Bakke Monogatari in particular. I haven't thought about the degree to which that's the case in subsequent shows. Very much. So we could argue about that.
To use a trigger word, it's a deconstruction of the harem genre. One of the very strong scenes that I also keep rewatching is when Senju Gahara takes Araragi on their first date to Stargaze. The thing that a scene like that tells me is that this is actually not going to be like a harem show where he actually sticks with a girl and he has that girl as his girlfriend and they are dedicated to each other. And that is something that also separates. I mean, of course, he then later on keeps saying how Hanekawa is the perfect girl and everything, or other things that he says in Hana Monogatari, which you haven't seen yet, so I won't say what he says. Yeah, that's just the, I guess, one of the strong reasons why I got hooked, as well as with all the other things.
Mushishi, you mentioned Mushishi, likes to pose a question and then just bathe in the question, give you a lot of time to think about it, give you a lot of... It gives you an emotion to bathe in. It's very fitting. But that's Mushishi. Now, Bakemonogatari, or Monogatari in general, has a different idea, or has the same idea, but a different implementation. They want to take an idea and talk it to death with all different viewpoints, all different angles, and explore the topic in almost a boardroom-type meeting fashion, where everybody has an opinion, everybody needs to weigh in on it. Maybe that's why I like it so much, is because literally it's me incarnate, you know, adding your opinion where it's not needed and trying to comment on every little thing. And that's the difference between the two. So I can completely understand, because I'm not a fan of Mushishi, not by, you know, any real standard. I mean, it exists. It's a thing. Bakemono or Monogatari likes to really dive into something. And I think that's where the self-indulgent comes into, is because Nisio Isin likes to really analyze and pick apart things. And that's his self-indulgence. And he always ends up cutting the girl's hair, which he's a complete and utter bastard for cutting Hitagi's hair.
So that's how Monogatari approaches things, I guess. It looks at them from all sorts of different various angles. And I think this might be where it's losing me. I'm missing an anchor, a lens, some sort of theme or purpose acting as a through line that I can tether myself to before I can really start breaking it down. I need there to be some sort of unifying idea I can use to center myself, because as it is, I still don't know what Bakemonogatari is about, which only serves to make it feel even more postmodern to me. I feel like it's toying with me, like me directly. It's just coming close enough to pique my curiosity and then dancing away before I can really grasp what it's about. Monogatari is flirting with me. And in some weird way, I kind of find that alluring. I want so badly to figure out who that woman is behind her mask, so to speak. It's the thrill of the chase that's making me pursue this like I am. But if the biggest thing drawing me to something is a stubborn desire to figure out whether or not it's good, what does that say about Monogatari? That's not a rhetorical question, by the way. I'm legitimately trying to figure out what that says. I mean, it's obvious that it's making me feel something. And even if it does that indirectly, is it still succeeding in some sense? If I get an answer to why I do or don't like the show, will it still interest me as much? And if I don't, does that mean I've just wasted my time? So, now I need to ask myself, what do I hope to accomplish with all of this? What am I expecting to get out of this journey that I'm about to undergo? Why do I think somebody's going to listen to some guy babbling about why he doesn't get a series? When I started planning all this out, my goal was to see whether or not I could come to love Monogatari. But what happens if I don't?
So I'm watching Shirabako. I'm on probably the last 4 or 5 episodes, and I haven't enjoyed it nearly as much as everyone else has. In fact, it's...
Shame on you.
Well, yeah, and I almost felt bad about it. I'm like, guys, why am I not liking this? Like, what am I missing? And there have been multiple times I'm like, oh, I finally get the show. Okay, and then the next episode comes by, and it's like, I completely lost all of that. It just, what happened? For a moment there, I was in the rhythm of the show, enjoying it, but now I'm not. Like, what, you know, usually some shows, they have their own unique rhythm. They march to the beat of their own drum, and you have to in line with, you know, try and align yourself with that, versus sometimes you have your own rhythm and the show is trying to match it. Like Evangelion, I think, is a great example of a show that tries to match your drum, because it means something different to everybody. At the same time, Bakemono kind of has this really weird rhythm. Most, if we have to keep using a music analogy, you know, everybody, most anime that's really boring and very conventional is going to use a very conventional beat, you know, 4/4s or whatever. Whereas Monogatari has no sense of other people. There's a disregard almost for anyone who watches it and says this is what it is, and it's unabashedly what it is, and has a time signature that's odd and fitting extra beats into the measure that may not belong but somehow makes sense. So sometimes
it's one of those 5/4 shivs.
It's a 5/4. That's the exact analogy I was going to use too, so there you go. You know, but like Shirobako, I'm not going to say, I mean, on paper I would love that show. It's like, oh man, you know, it's all about anime people making anime. Like, well, it's not to love. And it's got a cast of almost nothing but cute girls. But for some reason, I'm watching it and it's just like, yeah, that's a show. And I just don't have the burning love that everyone else does. It's because I can't seem to lock on. I mean, there are plenty of good pieces of art that will go unappreciated because someone can't relate to it. Is that the fault of the person? Is that the fault of the art? What's the answer? Well, the answer is unique to everybody, because that's a self-discovery moment for you. At the same time, I think Monogatari is not immune to this at all. Maybe it's possible Monogatari is just not for you. There are plenty of great things that work on paper, but no one really wants to practice communism. So I'm not trying to say that, you know, Bakemonogatari is communism, but for some people it very well could be. You know, I would love to be able to show up and just watch a show and enjoy it, but that's not challenging. It's enjoyable, but it's not challenging. And the best art in some way, form, or set will challenge you and change you. That's what the best art does.
Maybe Josh is right. Maybe there's just something about who I am or who I'm not that keeps Monogatari from resonating on the same wavelength. Maybe I'm not going to get it. Maybe for me, Monogatari is just communism. After all, Kanbaru does have all those little red books. But even if I don't get it, even if I can't get it, that doesn't mean I shouldn't still try. The best art challenges us, huh? Well, I guess it's time to challenge myself. Let's give this series another shot. Maybe something will finally click, and if not, that doesn't have to mean the journey was worthless. So let's officially kick this story off, shall we? The narrative of how I came, or perhaps didn't come, to love the Monogatari series. A buggy Monogatari, if you will. Of course, if my problem is that I can't figure out how I'm supposed to be watching Monogatari, I'll need some help. So I'm pulling in some friends who I think will have some good insight. After all, Monogatari likes to approach ideas from every angle and talk them to death. I may as well do the same. Thank you for listening to Spiral Radio. I'm Buggy, reminding you that all the lights in the sky are stars. Music used in this episode comes from Bakemonogatari. Songs used were Suteki Meppo, Haikyo, and Gaiden Kosetsu, all by Satoru Kosaki. The opening music was No Helping It by Taku Iwasaki, and the ending music was Sora Iro Days by Shoko Nagakawa, both from Tangentopa Gurren Lagann. Special thanks to Chris the Raggedy Man Schultz for providing the narration for the opening, and to Ashes for providing the show's cover art. You can find her work on her Instagram linked in the show notes. Thanks as well to Josh Dunham, The Subtle Doctor, Fetch, and Respawn for lending their voices to this episode. This episode wouldn't have been possible to make without any of these people, and I'm so thankful for all of their help. Spiral Radio can be found on the Bug Blog at bagubudagu.wordpress.com. That's baguburagu.wordpress.com, as well as on iTunes. If you enjoyed the show, I would be deeply grateful if you shared it with others or left an iTunes rating to help spread the word. Next episode, The Tatami Galaxy.